the New Year edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. Hope you are having a fantastic year so far. Being that the year is only 4 days old, I highly doubt that too much bad or good has happened so far. So there's still plenty of time to make everything start off on the right foot. I apologize greatly for missing the last show. Episode 396 was originally supposed to be taped last Wednesday, but it originally started off with just being a night of fun with the wife, where we were playing Mario Brothers Wii and a whole bunch of other fun stuff. But it just didn't work out, because after like once episode at night, my voice just went completely off the charts and horrible. So I ended up losing my voice for the past couple days. I'm just gonna hope it kind of sticks out here for this episode. So we're gonna get right on into the fun stuff here. The Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows, including us, have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational stuff over at techpodcasts.com. The Caffeination can be found over at www.caffination.com, where we talk all about caffeine culture and technology news. We are coming up rapidly on our four-year anniversary and almost up to the 400th show. I will be recording a special show on 10910 to kind of commemorate 4 years in the pod space. It should be interesting to see exactly what happens going forward here. The show has changed significantly since it started out. It used to be just a 15 minute badly edited blurb, and now it's a longer badly edited blurb, so hopefully you're going to find that interesting. As per usual, every Wednesday night, provided the voice holds out, we will be doing the live taping of the Caffeination over at live.caffeination.com at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard or Daylight or whatever we are time. There's a chance that I might end up moving that back to 11 to kind of try and let everything process, but I'm not sure, so we'll take a vote. Any comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail. If you're interested in stopping by the live taping and you think 10 o'clock on the Eastern Coast is a good idea, then please drop me a line, or if you think we should push it back to 11. All right, let's see what else we got in store for you today. Today's show is sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. With inclement weather sweeping the nation, it's either raining, snowing, or it's bone-chilling cold outside like it is right now. Who wants to run across town and get almost certainly delayed flight for just a short meeting? Skip the flight, skip the drive, put down your scarf. Use GoToMeeting to host an online meeting instead. It really couldn't be simpler. Everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com and sees your desktop on their screen. No delays, no canceled flights, just productive meetings. Think about it. One click and no snow days, and you too could be hosting your own training sessions or give product demos from your warm office. You can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days, but you must visit www.GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's www.GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast for a free 30-day trial. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all kinds of crazy and cool fun things that we do around here. We're going to dive right on into the meat and the potatoes of the show, because I can already feel my voice going a place I don't want it to. So we're still working out a couple of the quality bugs here, so if you notice one episode sounds better than another, please feel free to let me know, because I'm trying. We're back to recording on one machine, because apparently the cables that I have added a little bit of hiss to the last show, so we're going to try and knock that out completely. Alright, moving right along, we have a great story to lead off the Geekcraft section here at the Caffeination Podcast. It's Geekcraft and Food and Caffeinated Bits. As always, we're splitting it up. We're back down to two sections since there's no huge thing on the horizon. New York City's 2010 Times Square display is pedal-powered. I don't know if you knew this, but at the stroke of midnight, when they had the big countdown where it went from 2009 to 2010 or 2010, however you feel like saying, most people are going 2010 or just 10 or something like that. I'm not really even sure. I'm kind of running the gamut between the two. I'll listen to whatever you have to say, but I won't go with 2K10. I think that's a little bit ridiculous. But there were tons and tons and tons of LED lights that lit up nice and bright to showcase the arrival of the new year. And apparently it was all part of a promotion, not just for the new year, and, you know, promoting 2010, because, you know, everything's about marketing now, but it was also a promotion from Duracell, and everything was entirely powered by people. Volunteers sat on these fun little Duracell Smart Power Lab machines, you know, pedaled their little rear ends off, and built up what they said was over 32,000 watts of energy to light up the numerals 2010 after the ball drop. So I don't know how long it was lit for. I don't know if it stays lit for however long, but I think this is kind of cool. We've done a little bit of research before on you know, what exactly it would take to power things by your pedaling, and it takes a heck of a lot of energy to actually do that. So it's kind of interesting. And the best part about these articles is that math geeks and cycling geeks always jump right on in the comments section. So if you'd like to see a good old-fashioned throwdown, just check the comments section on any article that mentions this, and you're sure to see at least one math geek throwdown saying somebody's calculations were wrong. So I'm not a math geek. I barely made it through the different things that I had to, so that's that, and here we are. All right, now taking a quick look back, the 10 biggest scientific breakthroughs in 2009 were highlighted by the fine folks over at Wired.com. So one of my absolute favorite magazines, so it's interesting to see what they thought was the heavy hitters, really, because a lot of the stuff that they talk about really hasn't come out into the general population. So it's not like they're going to be sitting there talking about, you know, the latest cell phones or anything else, or that other people are going to be blathering about, like Engadget or anything like that. They're talking like really big, hardcore, hard-hitting scientific breakthroughs. So now, here you go. A new element was added to the periodic table of elements. Number 10, element 114. So it's kind of crazy that all the stuff over that, over, I think, 104, it has to be created in a lab, and unfortunately, I don't understand how, if you can create something in a lab, they can still make it onto the periodic table of elements, just because it has to be something that is the smallest building block of what it should represent. So it's like you can't break carbon down further to any form of element or molecule. So you had to somehow create these elements. So it's just always kind of weirded me out when they find, or when they create new ones, not when they find them, but. All right, number 9 was the progress towards a vaccine for dengue fever. There's 230 million people every year that are infected with this, so any kind of progress is good progress. Number 8 is a breathalyzer that actually detects lung cancer. I had not heard of this at all, but they've actually found a sensor. They've created a sensor that can actually smell cancer, so it can smell the sickness on you. I wonder what it would say that I have. I mean, I don't know if it can tell you cancer from, you know, just a little bit of laryngitis or something like that, but I think it would be kind of a interesting to see. It's also kind of sad that it's not really more wider spread. You haven't heard a lot more about this. Computer program predicts drug side effects. We're starting to get into the realm where, you know, you can find out that computers are able to do a lot more predictive mathematics than the programmers themselves can even comprehend. So they're actually working on drug side effects and working on the different proteins and everything that goes into creating a new designer drug to see exactly what it interacts with and how many other people you know, might have potential problems with it. I think this is pretty cool. The only weird thing about it is, like, you're now giving up complete control to a computer, and I just think that's kind of weird. Number 6, jellyfish actually stir the ocean. This blew my mind. I had never even heard of this. I mean, everybody says, okay, when you're looking at the tides, it's entirely done by the moon's gravitational pull, and there's a whole bunch of other different things. There's shifting tectonic plates, and there's a whole bunch of other different things that apparently influence the motion of the ocean. And, you know, but what might actually also be the case is that jellyfish might actually stir the ocean with as much power as the winds and the tides, because water has a tendency to follow a surface. As the jellyfish work their way throughout the ocean, there's so many of them that they can tend to create their own miniature currents, and overall they can apparently have a large effect on anything. That is just insane. So whenever you're at the shore, wherever you happen to be, and you see a swarm of jellyfish, don't worry, they're not dangerous. dangerous. It's what they're trying to do is work on the tides just a little bit, or change the currents. Or, of course, they probably are dangerous. They might sting you. But, you know, just stay away if they have long, nice, thin tendrils. That just tends to be bad juju overall. Number five, bisophenol A in plastic is found to be harmful in humans. I need to actually check to see if a lot of the things that I use have this still. I know we're throwing out all the baby bottles, basically, for the new kid coming along. And we're getting all new ones in because we're not sure if they had this fun little chemical in there or not. But the sad thing is there's not really an easy way to test to see what, if anything, these bottles, or which bottles actually have it in there. But apparently it was quite common, so I kind of need to look into that. The bottle that they have in there looks a lot like one of the water bottles that I use fairly frequently. Number four, life extension breakthrough. If you're a rat, you might live longer in 2010, so maybe that's 10 weeks instead of a 9. They found schizophrenia in the genome for number three, or maybe they didn't, who knows, but it's kind of interesting. I'm always kind of fascinated by any study of the genome and any pinpointing of anything down, because as soon as you say you found something, chances are that there's going to be something just a little bit around the corner that kind of throws everything for a loop. So it's interesting to see where it goes. Number two, the widely publicized unveiling of Ardy, which is a human ancestor of an older age than the oldest known living human ancestor before, which was named Lucy. So rather than Australopithecine afarensis, which was Lucy, we now have Ardipithecus ramidus, which is a skeleton of incredibly, it's basically 4.2 or 4.4 million years old, and it's at some point before, or they can't tell whether or not it's a direct human ancestor or if it's an offshoot at some point. So just looking through biological evolution and looking through the different fossil records, everybody's always like, well, why aren't they finding more missing links, as they call it? I mean, everybody's always looking for the supposed missing link. I'm going to tell you two things. First of all, there is no actual missing link. Everything that's in the fossil record either proves or follows along in a set tree. So we know where everything should be. We don't have fantastic examples of everything along the path. That's the problem. The other problem is that there's other branches that dead end. So, you know, at one point in time, everybody used to think that Neanderthals were actually ancestors of humans when they were a separate branch. There was no... it's not like you could say, oh, your grandfather was a Neanderthal, even if, you know, he was a knuckle dragger or something like that. But it's they were a completely separate branch of humanity. Or of the... I'm mixing up my Latin terminology here, but as somebody who worked a lot in human paleontology in college, it's kind of interesting to see how lay media attach different terms to these things. More often than not, they're like, oh, you know, this is the missing link, this is a breakthrough. And people also wonder, why don't we have a better fossil record for human ancestors? Well, I gotta tell you, ceremonial burial is not nearly as widespread earlier on in human development. So after you get to a certain point when they didn't care about when somebody died and they didn't actually go to the trouble of burying them, it's kind of hard to find the bones if they were just kind of either left off to the side or they were attacked or fell down a slope or something like that. It's very rare to find any kind of fossil like that where there was no culture of burying something, which is why there's not a whole lot of primate skeletons of that age around at all. So it's kind of interesting. So it's one of the things that I'm incredibly passionate about. I love researching this stuff, so I just wanted to pass it along. Number one, gene therapy is actually making a comeback, so it's going to be interesting to see where that one actually takes us. I think it's going to be interesting, but I'm not really sure. I can't speak intelligently on it, so I don't want to talk about it one way or the other. All right, next little thing we have for you here from over at TechCrunch. These are obviously the people who know. These are 10 technologies that are going to be huge in 2010. I'm going to go from 10 and work it back down to 1. Social CRM. Now, we're not talking about cultural resource management. We're actually talking about return on investments, basically. It's really bad being from an archaeological standpoint, or being from archaeology and anthropology. You know, we used CRM to be cultural resource management. It's basically you go in there, you you dig around, you find things that are past things, and you try and save them as a resource for future generations. CRM means something completely different in the business world, and it turns out more people know the CRM from the business world than the archaeology one. So apparently that's going to be huge. People are working on some mashups. Again, we're talking about the fractured space of social media kind of coalescing down into something a lot more useful to actual people. Then number 9 is Android. There's going to be a huge... what they're saying is uptick in applications and other things. I would love to get the Motorola Droid. Unfortunately, I don't really know if the data contract's going to work into the family budget with a new noob on the way. You know what I mean? Number 8, mobile transactions. Apparently, the United States is going to be getting on board with actually buying things with your phone. This is going to be kind of cool. Number 7 is augmented reality. That's where you're looking at a regular scape or something like that, a regular picture of your street, and there's other games that are going on beyond the human eye. So it's interesting. I don't really think that one's going to take off. Number 6, mobile video, like Quick and the Ustream and a lot of other stuff. HTML5 is number 5. Well, I would make it number 5 anyway. I just hope that it's not going to mess too many other things up. It's going to be interesting. It's going to support offline data storage, drag and drop, and a whole host of other different features that are actually going to be out there. So it's just, I'm going to have to relearn how to program things again to make them useful. Chrome OS, it's going to be fantastic to see what a new OS into the netbook place. That comes in at number 4. Number 3, real-time search. Searching Twitter, Facebook, MySpace, and all the other ones out there. Whatever people update as things happen, people are going to start looking more toward them. I'm not talking about Fox News. I'm not talking about CNN. I'm not talking about saying, oh, I was checking Twitter. It's like, no, Twitter is an unverified source. So unless it's one of your operatives in the field, it's not a verified source. So don't use it as that. What you can use it as when there's a lot of people talking about something, you can talk about things that are trending. But then you have a problem where you have things like Google bombs where people make things trend for no apparent reason, and then people report on them like they're actually happening. So number 2 is geo. So GPS and geolocation is going to be huge. It's going to be Google Local. It's going to be a whole bunch of other ton of things. And number 1 is the tablet. There's beautiful Android tablets out there already, and of course you are going to get inundated with CES and the fantastic little Apple fair that's going to be happening not too far off from now. And Apple is supposed to be introducing a tablet, which means that you're going to hear about nothing but the Apple tablet from all the tech review sites. I got to tell you, sometimes the Apple bias for them really kind of snows under a lot of the other tech that's out there. When you really look at the market, Apple has a significantly smaller mind share of the market as a whole than a lot of the other products that are out there, and they get really short shrift, the other products, that is. So that's what TechCrunch says is going to be big in 2010. Another little thing out of Slashdot is at current rates, we're only going to have a few more years left of the IPv4 addresses, which is basically every computer that's sitting on the internet right now, every computer that's attached to the giant network that is the internet, has an address, which is basically like a phone number that goes directly to that computer. Oversimplification. So it's a set of 40 to 255 digit numbers. So for instance, the web server at Temple has a specific one, the web server in my basement has one, and whenever you type in yahoo.com, puzzlepiecepro.com, caffeination.com, temple.edu, it goes to a place called a name server that says, okay, that's what you're typing, this is the phone number, and then it sends your computer that number. So that's an oversimplification, but the problem is there's only so many addresses. Apparently, there's only 3,706,650,624 usable IP addresses. This is also because of a couple different things in there. For instance, anything beginning with 10 dot and then anything after it is completely unusable. It means a local network. There's a bunch of other reserved networks, and some of them are class B, you know, means basically more and more of the IP addresses are actually reserved for other uses, and it's kind of hard to, you can't use them on the network. For instance, you can't have a computer that is, the address is 10.0.0.1. That's the address of my router, that's the address of like tons of other people's routers out there, because that means a local network. It can't go beyond that. There is a new not new, there's a new shift towards IPv6 addresses, which it adds, I think, another two 0 to 255s in there. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that's in there. I haven't even really paid too much attention to it, but I'm going to have to, because apparently they say before Obama is done this term, so before, currently we're using 81% of the available addresses. I've got to stop using the... references that they use in the stories, but currently we're using 81% of the available addresses, and at the same rate that we've been increasing them, increasing 79 million per year almost, so it's going to be used up quite quickly. So we got to start migrating over to the other way of doing things. That's IPv6. And if you thought Y2K was a pain in the tuchus, wait till you get a load of this. All right, going on to the more fun stuff that we do here usually at the Caffeination is Tub E. It's a bathtub that automatically cleans you, automatically does a whole bunch of stuff. And you're looking for a clean start in 2010, they got you covered with this thing. This is definitely what I would call an overzealous bath. It has a whole bunch of extra controls. It looks like a giant copper flower pot with three interesting and concentric rings going around it that lead into a shiny wall. I don't like the shiny wall idea. It also looks like you're bathing in a coffee cup, which wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, except for the fact that it's kind of small. I don't know, if I'm going to actually be taking a bath as opposed to a shower, I want the ability to stretch out a little bit. I'd like to be able to lounge, even though I know that's not the function, you know what I mean? But there's a whole bunch of extra functions in this. There's no word on the price, but it has a ability to keep the water at a constant temperature, so if you like it scalding hot, this thing can burn your flesh off. If you like it nice and cold, it can do that too. It also has auto-fill, auto-empty, auto-clean, so it's like an oven, but with water. And it also has a whole bunch of other fun little bath oils and things that you can add in there, which I don't know why you would necessarily need to do that. I never really understood the idea of bath oils. It's like you're adding something to the water and you're supposed to be, you know, cleaning yourself off. I don't really get it. But hey, I'm a guy and apparently bath oils aren't really for us anyway. So it's interesting. I wanted to pass it along because I thought it was cool. That one was from over at device.com. Next little thing. This is incredibly nifty. For surfing in space, the Star Trek wetsuit. Yes, they have a collection of the old school Star Trek uniforms. I believe they have red, blue, yellow, and there's one other. I can't remember which one they actually range them from prices from $435 to $475. And it's really cool. When you really think about that, you're like, okay, wow, that's awesome. I can't believe that nobody had done anything like that. And, you know, you have to go through all the licensing and everything like that. But then you take into account, close your eye for a second and envision your average Star Trek fan. Now envision that person in a wetsuit. Is this a pretty picture? I didn't think so, and we're going to be moving along. Now, I'm not saying that every Star Trek fan out there is overweight or obese or anything like that, but I am saying that there is a vast majority of these super fans which are probably not in tip-top physical condition, and spandex or neoprene is probably not going to be the most forgiving of fabrics for them to wear. So think Tron guy, but with a Star Trek outfit. All right, next little item we got for you here is from over at the bbc.co.uk. Secret mobile phone cones cracked, as they said. But I never really thought about it, but apparently there's a way in which your conversation between A and B when you're talking on a cell phone is encrypted. I mean, if you really think about it, it would have to be, so that your conversation wasn't technically out in the open. Well, a German computer scientist has published the details of the secret code, and he has a way to access them. So he cobbled together a solution for how to crack this code, how to get in through the different algorithm for encryption, and actually break it open so that you can decrypt any phone that uses GSM, which is any phone over in Europe almost, and it's AT&T and Sprint here in the United States. Incredibly scary. And at the same point in time, you shouldn't be talking about anything on your cell phone that you wouldn't want broadcast to the world. It's kind of like email, but the illusion of security is worth a lot to a lot of people. So the companies that are protecting this have, of course, sued to keep it offline. So rather than saying, yes, this is a problem and we're going to work to fix it, even though the first hole in their security was found over 15 years ago. Yes, this is a 20-year-old algorithm. The first hole was found 5 years in, I guess probably because nobody thought to look. And then it took 20 years completely to crack because I guess, again, nobody really probably tried to look. This is scary, if you really think about it. Think about how many phone conversations would be out in the open if this fell into the wrong hands. And rather than suing the guy, they might want to take a little bit more time and fix the problem. So, all right, next little item we got for you here is from over at Hackaday.com. I have a laser cutter in work. This looks like a fun project. It's a laser cut puzzle box. We're going to move along because that's one of my nicknames from high school was Puzzle Box. Paul and Puzzle were a little bit close when I wrote them for my gamer tag. My gamer tag is PZUL. My name is spelled PAUL. So you move the A to the Z and that's Puzzle. Whereas people online have a tendency to call me Puzzle. That got morphed from Puzzle Box because I love riddles and everything. So this is a story very near and dear to my heart. This is a way to make your very own little puzzle boxes to hide all your fun things if you have a laser cutter, or you're just really good with an X-Acto. Alright, next item we got for you here is a dog air purifier. Now, dogs have a very keen sense of smell, so this is a way to attach an air purifying unit so that you could, again, introduce oils and all other kinds of aromatherapy nonsense into your dog. Here's the problem. If this is a dog air purifier, I don't want my dog to be able to smell clean, pure air. That doesn't bother me, because the dog is perfectly fine navigating his life throughout all these smells anyway. What I want is a purifier on the other end. If there's a way to put a collar around the rear end of the dog and have it purify all the air there, I think this would be a much easier sell. Even though it's only $17, I think my dog's perfectly fine with her air the way it is. Alright, and the last little item we got for you here in the Geekcraft section of the Caffeination is retractable cords from your power. This is a new concept in power that's completely from over at yankodesign.com, and it's an interesting idea. Basically, there's a retractable cord in your actual wall. There's a what they said a 1.5 meter cord, so roughly 9 feet of cord is stored in your wall, so that it eliminates the need for those tiny little extension cords that you have everywhere, because all you have to do is plug your appliance in, two clicks, and then it pulls out to however long you need it, and then you know, a quick little tug, and then it goes right back in. I think this is really cool. I just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was fantastic. There's no way that this is ever actually going to be implemented in the same way, but I think it's really neat, and I think it should probably be looked into. Alright, moving right along to the food and caffeinated bits here at the Caffeination. We have some fun stuff, and first off, a little announcement that I found out was kind of interesting. Apparently, I've been having a lot of discomfort lately when eating certain foods and trying coffee with milk and all this other stuff, and this has been for a while now. And it specifically became more acute after I got sick last year, and the more research I did and the more I finally looked into it, apparently it turns out that I'm lactose intolerant now because of some of the medication that I took killed all of the good bacteria or something in my body, but I can't process milk anywhere near the ways that I used to be able to. So it's kind of interesting learning to eat new ways. So it's going to be it's going to be an interesting adventure going forward. Doesn't mean I'm going to be trying products any less, but I got to tell you, it's going to be weird. I might have to enlist a couple other people, especially if I start getting sent like samples of coffee ice cream, which I have a nice big half gallon upstairs, and I'm really kind of dreading even looking at it because the past couple of episodes with the ice cream. So I got all the fun little pills and accoutrements that are supposedly go with it, so we're going to see if this helps out or not in the future, but I just thought it was fun, and I would share with the group. Next little thing that we have up for you here is Let Them Eat Cake. This is a PB&J cake. It's an interesting cake mold called a cake witch. This is a way to mold cake so that it looks like giant slabs of bread, and that you can put peanut butter and jelly like frostings on it so that it looks like a giant peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I think this is fantastic. I can't even begin to tell you how cool I think this is. Unfortunately, there's no There's no price on it or anything like that, but I just had to share with the group just because I think this is awesome, especially for my son, because he loves peanut butter and jelly. It's pretty much all he'll eat other than cheese sandwiches, and pretty much he throws the bread out with the cheese sandwich and just eats the cheese. So I thought this was really cool, and as soon as this becomes available, I will let you know, but I had to pass it along because I thought it was that neat. Now, again, in the realm of cake, and again, to try and mess with you people who are attempting to diet for the new year, this is an insanely awesome cake and pie slicer and server. This is a concept which I think is incredibly long overdue. Imagine a giant cookie cutter in the shape of a slice of cake. And where you take it, you push through the cake, and then in order to heat to keep the stuff in the right way, you squeeze it ever so slightly, and as you pull it out, everything is maintained there. So this way you can slice pies, you can slice ice cream cakes, you can slice anything you want. This is a beautiful piece of industrial design, and I cannot believe it. This is one of those things where you smack yourself in the face. It's like tongs for cake. So no more trying to like slice out the perfect piece, and you can say, oh, okay, you know, that one's a little bit too big. This is one size fits all slices. I think this is a great idea, so I had to pass it along. Next little thing that we have for you here is what I'm calling a ho-hum poison waste drum glass set. The idea behind it is there's a little radioactive icon on the one side, and they look like 55-gallon drums, except they're significantly smaller, and you're supposed to drink green drinks out of them, and ooh, look, it looks like toxic waste. You know what? There's only one company out there, and they probably did this accidentally, where it actually looks like a bottle of something that you're not supposed to drink. The company Balls that makes energy drinks actually has tiny little stippling on the outside of the bottle. This is the way that people in the older times used to have to mark poisons on their nightstand. So if you had a poison or something like that, it had to be marked in basically a bumpy bottle so that if you were to grab it on your nightstand for whatever reason, you wouldn't take it in the middle of the night. So this is one of those weird laws that they enacted a long time ago, and it kind of fell by the wayside. So I think somebody needs to actually make like a set of poison glasses that have that kind of little stippling on the outside, and I think it would mean a lot more. These are kind of interesting, but other than the fact that they look like 55-gallon drums and they have the little toxic waste symbol on there, if you're not drinking green drinks, they don't really mean anything. Now, this is an example of a fantastic little gadget. This is a RAR... This is... that's just the thing up at the top. This is training chopsticks that have dinosaurs on the top of them. Now, I've been trying to get my kid to use chopsticks, and it's really not working too well. So a lot of people have said, well, you know, maybe you should try using training chopsticks. I mean, yes, he's only 3 years old, but you know what? I know there's people in the world who have their three-year-olds using chopsticks. They're probably a little bit more forceful with it than I am. My wife can't even use them, but I'm relatively proficient with them. I love eating, you know, Asian food with them. I think they're a fun, easy, and neat way to eat. And in order to share that with my son, I like this idea of having the dinosaur chopsticks, so I wanted to share it with the group. I can hear my voice destroying itself in the background, so I'm going to try and wrap this one up here really quick. Next little item we got for you here from over at nerdapproved.com is an interesting little neoprene lid that fits over the top of your coffee mug that looks like a pop top on a beer can. I think this looks pretty cool. Unfortunately, again, there's no word yet on when this thing will be out. Next item from over at geekolohi.com is blue beer from melted icebergs. Yes, you heard me here correctly. This is a Japanese beer that is tying in icebergs that land on a beach to use the melted water to actually create beer, create and brew beer. That's one level of interesting. Then they're actually coloring the beer itself with seaweed so that it actually turns a nice ice blue. Ice beer, ice blue. I think this is pretty cool, and I'd love to be able to try it. So I'm going to have to check out the six-pack store around me to see if they have this. They have beers from all over the world there and some really bizarre off-the-wall stuff. So I actually saw a bottle that they had in there from my wife and I went to on our honeymoon to St. Lucia. It's an island in the West Indies. And there's a beer on St. Lucia, that's the only place in the world you're supposed to be able to get. It's called Piton Beer. It's named after the mountains in the island. And they had one. So I was looking at it. I mean, I already have my own bottle here, but I thought it was fantastic. And I was very tempted to buy it, but I didn't at that time. Because it was Christmas beer season, all right? So I think this is interesting. Apparently, there's two other colors from the same brewery. There's one that's bright red and one that's like a lime green. But everybody's had green beer. How many people have had blue beer? All right, and the last little item we got for you here from Mass from over at coffeehero.com. We're living like the Jetsons already, people. Coffee that stirs itself. Yes, there's a coffee mug out there for only $19, a tiny little whirly gig at the bottom that will spin your coffee right round, spin it right round. And I think this is interesting, except, of course, if you're one of those people who leaves the spoon in the coffee, then it's going to flick the spoon all over your desk, and I don't think that would really work out for very many people. Unless, of course, the actual spinny doohickey is actually made of like rubber or something like that. So I think it's a I think it's interesting. There's also a fun lid, so you can kind of turn it into a tiny little cyclone inside the glass, so I think that's fun. So that's from over at thinkgeek.com. Thank you, Mass, for sending that one over. And before we get too much more long in the tooth here, I'd like to send you out on your way. Thank you ever so much for dealing with this rough and ready New Year edition here at the Caffeination, episode number 396. Just a quick reminder, in case you are finding this on any of the other websites out there, this one is nestled along with all of its other slightly less hoarse-sounding episodes over at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com, and we have been the Caffeination Podcast. Any comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate mail, please feel free to fire one off to caffeination@gmail.com, or you can dial our listener line at 215-240-1319. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and stay caffeinated, people.